And you're more than welcome to join us anytime you want. All you have to do is just give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And if you have a car question, and you can frame it like my husband says, or you can frame it like my wife insists, or my father-in-law says this, you can do any of those kinds of things, because it's not going to make any difference when it gets down to it. So we take all kinds of car questions, and what works well is that you tell me what kind of car it is first. Car, truck, motor, home, whatever. This is the what we're talking about, and this is the problem we're having. It's overheating, or it's pulling to the right, or it cranks over but it doesn't start. And then we're going to have some question and answer time. So I'm going to ask you questions, and you'll answer them. And the answers are pretty simple: yes, no, or I don't know. Now the men have to practice the I don't know. The women don't have to practice that, but the men do. Nevertheless, we'll take any kind of call you've got. And we'll start off with, right now our industry is different than it was even a year ago. There is a whole lot of stuff going on right now, shenanigans. I call them shenanigans, and I don't mean that to have a heavily negative connotation, but when you, there's many of you that are taking your car in for service, and you're getting a laundry list of stuff that it needs. Here's the problem. In the old days, we got to chomp on your wallet every 3,000 miles when you came in for an oil change. And we got to sell you a tire rotation or an air conditioning service or a battery service or bring to your attention an oil leak or a ball tire or an alignment, that kind of stuff. That's what it was a long time ago. Well, today with oil changes, most of you are going to change your oil somewhere between 7,500 and 15,000 miles. We don't get all that business. So what our industry, what my industry is doing now is we're making up our own time frames. So it pales into comparison with the one that's in your owner's manual, but we're making those up into almost an annual thing. So you're probably going to get, you need an alignment. Well, it's just, you know, you're just due. And that's just not really good enough, because if you need an alignment, there's going to be symptoms, and the driver's going to know about 75% of the symptoms, and the other 25% is going to be a tire wear issue that should be recognizable by the person changing the oil. So you have all these dynamics going on. And in the old days, every 30,000 miles, we did fluids. We did brake fluid, transmission service, cooling system, power steering fluid, differential fluid, transfer case fluid. We did all that at 30. Today it's all 100, 80 to 100. So the best thing you can do to save yourself a lot of money is familiarize yourself with the owner's manual and familiarize yourself with the time frame that the owner's manual calls for. So I think you'll find that many of the big ticket items are going to be between 80 and 100,000 miles. That means you're going to drive pretty much uneventful for 80 to 100,000 miles. That means you're going to have oil changes and tire rotations. When we do a tire rotation, we should check your brakes, because the brakes are right there. So when we take the tire off, we look at the brakes, and then we put the front on the back and the back on the front, or however the shop decides to rotate your tires. But that's really what it's all about. And then when you get the estimate that, Mrs. Jones, we've noticed that you've got a rack and pinion leaking pretty profusely, or it's leaking, and I went ahead and gave you an estimate that the rack, the labor, and the alignment afterwards is going to be about $1,200, ma'am. And you might be thinking to yourself, my car doesn't leak any oil. My car doesn't drip any oil. And so ask those questions. Well, would you point out to me where the leak is at? Can we see it from, can you lift the hood and show me? Would it be appropriate if I could have one of you guys take a picture and send it to me of my car up in the air and there's a problem? Send a picture. You know, my brother's a mechanic. He lives in Alabama, and he always says, you know, let me see pictures of what they want to do. So that's what I'm doing. So come up with a story that just works. But it's unfortunate that we all can't just be on the same plane. It's unfortunate we can't all be on the same rule book. It's unfortunate that many shops depend on huge debt service, and as a result, they can't really afford to wait to do a bunch of work on your car until you hit 80 to 100,000 miles. So they're going to sell you stuff. And then at the very last resort, is do me a favor. I want you to write it down, everything I need. Because my husband, you know, doggone it, he likes to see things in writing. Or in the event that you're a woman, you can say, my dad. My dad lives in St. Louis, and he likes to see. So just write it as if you're talking to my dad. Tell me exactly what it is that I need, and then put the pricing associated with it. Here's the good news. If they're trying to sell you a rack and pinion because yours is bad, and it isn't bad, they're not going to write that down. I hope they're smarter than that. So that happens all the time. That happens all the time. Where somebody is told they need something serious on their car, your air conditioning compressor is leaking, your power steering pump is leaking, but in reality, ultimately somebody gets involved and says, maybe it's a different car. Maybe they accidentally, we had two blue Fords in that day and they wrote the wrong comments on the wrong blue Ford. I don't know, but you don't have those problems. Now, when that happens and you're going to go to the second shop and say, would you look my car over? You need to be underneath the car with them. You need to go and look over their shoulder. And don't let them tell you, well, you're not allowed in the shop, because that just doesn't happen. If you're allowed in the shop if you're escorted into the shop and you're under our care, custody, and control. If you get hurt, our insurance company is going to be first in line anyway. But the fact of the matter is if we're walking out there with you, we're going to make sure you're not going to get hurt. We're not going to put you in a position that you're going to get hurt, trip over an air hose, trip over a tire, and fall down, stuff like that. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we do have a caller. Who might that be?
Say good morning to Greg.
Greg, good morning.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can.
Perfect, because I want to do some writing, so I got you on speaker.
Okay.
I've actually called you before. It's referenced my 65 Chevy long bed truck.
Okay.
It's been a while, so I doubt if you remember me. But I remember you saying you have somebody that kind of specializes in 65 Chevy trucks.
Well, what part of town do you live in?
I'm in, my truck is actually at Glendale, so the older part of Glendale, roughly 59th Avenue and Northern.
Okay. I would send you to Kurtz Auto Repair, I-17 and Bell.
I-17 and Bell.
Yeah, Kurtz, K with a C, Kurtz. They can handle your 68 Chevy pickup truck. Larry Harker's at 38th Avenue and Indian School. He's been around long before your Chevy truck was born.
Okay, 38th and Indian School?
Yeah, Larry Harker's. So between Action Auto, well, Action up north is I-17 in Deer Valley. He's a mile north of Kurtz, so I gave you Kurtz because you're a little south of that. So Kurtz at I-17 in Bell and Larry Harker's at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Either one of those guys, let me just kind of touch base on something that I think will make you comfortable. It really has to do with the generation that the owner of the shop grew up in. I started working at a gas station in 1968, so I really have a wide background in older vintage cars. Chevys, Fords, Dodges, Hondas, Toyotas, Saabs, everything imaginable. And then I was part of the generation that got to go from points and condenser to electronic ignition. Then we went to carburetor. We were at carburetors. We went to feedback carburetors where we had an electric solenoid that would meter the flow of fuel. Then from there we went to fuel injection. And then we went to distributless ignition. We all of us old guys have been through all that. So we have a fundamental knowledge that many people are not, that don't have in our industry. So if making it, what is it you want to do on the truck?
Okay, well, that truck was left running. It was inherited from my dad. Towards his last part of his life, he wasn't able to start it up. We were starting it up just to keep it running, and then I guess that's a bad idea to just start it and shut it off, because I think it does something to the gaskets, what have you. So it hasn't started in a while, so everything's there. So you picture a truck that just hasn't been started in a long time.
Okay.
And whatever damage could be done by it, but to be honest with you, it'd be great to get somebody to come out. I don't think mechanics make house calls unless something's changed, and just kind of give it a look over and kind of give me an estimate of what it would take. And I get one free tow from AAA. I'd like to have it towed to that shop with whatever estimate they gave me and let them have at it.
Okay. I want you to...
Is that possible?
No. That's a bad idea. First of all, the reason we don't want you to start the truck and let it run for 3 or 4 minutes and shut it off is you didn't do anything except create some moisture that we didn't have before. If you're going to take the truck, if you're going to start the truck, I want you to go through a heat cycle. I want you to bring it up to operating temperature and then park it and let it go back down. There's no reason, if the truck did start, there's no reason with a little ether or spraying some carburetor spray in the carburetor that you couldn't get it running. And if you can get it running, then all you do is sit inside there, take your cup of coffee, bring the RPMs up to 1,000 RPMs or so, and just let it warm up. Now, the worst thing in the world you can do to any car is start it up, let it run for 5 minutes, and shut it off, because you just created a bunch of moisture that we don't need inside the engine. You've inhaled a bunch of cold air. You've inhaled a whole bunch of fuel because it's cold, so the electronic choke is richening up the mixture. If it's a fuel-injected car and a newer model car, same thing. We're adding a lot of fuel. So we need to go through a heat cycle. So take it out of your head that you're going to go out there and start it up and let it run for 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes, and it's going to love you more, because it's not. It's going to hate you more. So if you're going to take it, it's like a horse. You don't take the horse out of the barn, saddle him up, and walk him around the barn twice and put him back in. You go work cows. You take him out on a trot. You take him out on a big mile jaunt. But you've got to exercise the horse, and your truck is no different. So if it used to run, then if it cranks over, you need spark fuel and you need a starter. So if it cranks over, we're throwing the starter away, it's okay. Now we got to have spark and fuel. More than likely, you're missing fuel. So you get some carb spray, spray on the top, make sure you have a big blanket close by in case something catches fire, you can throw it on the blanket. And once you get it running, and then kick it up on fast idle, and then just sit there and let it warm up until you see the needle move. And once you see the coolant, the temperature needle move, then go drive it. And the best thing you could do is get on the freeway and just, you know, put it at 65 miles an hour and go 10 miles down and turn around and come back. We need a heat cycle, okay. So that's what you're missing, okay?
So you're saying there's no need for a mechanic or a specialist to just kind of make sure everything's good to go?
I think your expectations are unreasonable. I don't have the ability to tell you what's going to happen tomorrow to that truck. I don't.
Okay.
And I couldn't begin to, I mean, unless if the fan belt looks like a frayed shoelace, that's an easy call. But to tell you that the fuel pump's going to work okay, the water pump's going to work okay, the ignition system's going to be okay, the condenser's not going to burn out, the coil's not going to go south on me, I can't do that. And there's nobody that's going to want to go to your house and do that, and the guys that do go to your house to do that are going to sell you the world. So you're best served at a shop, and if you got a free tow, then tow it in there. But I think okay. You should go drive it, and I think we want the gauge, the temperature gauge, between half and three quarters, for sure. We want the oil pressure light to be off, and if you have an oil pressure gauge, we'd like it to be somewhere around half, a little past, a little left or right of the center. And the best thing you can do on all those old vintage cars is just go drive them. Take them to your daughter's in Prescott, and you're going to go see the grandkids. Take the truck. It'll love you. And you're going to get out there, you're going to run through a heat cycle, you're going to bring up the RPMs, you're going to put some load on it. That's a great thing. That's a great thing. Alrighty, Greg, good luck to you, buddy. Good luck. And we got lines open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Twenty-one minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. If you'd like to join us, you can, 602-508-0960. We have five lines open. Gil is my engineer. He's the dog that makes this thing run. He's the one that makes me sound great. He's the one that makes me hit all my marks. And this show is as good as it is because of Gil. So be nice to Gil, because if you're not nice, he'll just push the wrong button and you'll hear a dial tone. 602-508-0960. Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil has been around since 1968, and Automatic Transmission Exchange is one of those shops that really was born in the 50s and 60s and has now evolved to the 2013s, 2023s, and we get into a situation where the fundamentals of the transmission, the automatic transmission, are still the same. However, we've just simply changed the way we shift it. So it used to be vacuum, engine vacuum. It used to be load, how much throttle you're giving it. It used to be speed of the engine, speed of the vehicle. And now it's all electronic. But you know what? the fundamentals of an automatic transmission haven't changed. So if you have a small leak, you want someone to look at. If you, if you've got a problem, a check engine light that's transmission related, anything like that at all, just remember this: Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. It's really important to understand the science of your car, and I'll give you a quick science lesson. Water boils at 212, at sea level at 212. So we turn a liquid to a vapor at 212. But I want your car to run at 220. And you say, well, Mark, all the water in my cooling system will be a vapor. And I say, no, because once we mix it with coolant, we take water, 50-50 coolant, and we build that. Now we have a boiling point that's 260 to 280. And 260 is the red zone in your car. So I'm going to run you up, and I want the motor to run at 220, somewhere around 220, and I'll tell you why. Because water boils at 212, and water is an enemy of your engine, whether the motor is inhaling rain or heavily laden air with water, high humidity, or whether there's water being ingested into the motor from the cooling system, or whether you drive through floods, I don't know, but water is an enemy. I need your gauge to run half to three quarters most of that motor's life if you have something that's newer than a 1980. Half to three quarters. Do not be afraid of half to the beginning of the red zone. That is normal. It's not yellow. It's not red. It's normal. So there's just so many people that are of the opinion that if the needle gets past a quarter, it's overheating, or if it gets up to flirts with a half, it's overheating. It's not. It's not. The manufacturer of the car gives you a red zone in your coolant, your engine temperature. The red is stop. That doesn't mean continue to drive another 10 miles to home. When your needle hits the red, whether it's oil or your engine temperature, stop. Right there, get off as quickly as you can and turn the engine off. Because sustained driving with the red light on from the engine temperature is going to cause damage, and you're not going to like the bill. And at least twice a month, we get one of those towed in where the motor looks like somebody just cooked it. And you don't need to do that. A tow is a lot cheaper than an engine. So if you have that situation, then you'll have those decisions to make. But here's what we want to do. We don't want to start the car up and just go to the grocery store and back all year long, because the car never reaches operating temperature. When we get the car to get to reach operating temperature, which is 200 to 220, then we're going to boil a lot of the water out of the engine, not of the cooling system, but moisture in the engine. And we want to get it up past 212, the boiling point, up to 220. We want to clean up the oil a little bit and get the water out of the oil, because every time you shut your car off, you get about half a teaspoon of water, because the condensation inside the engine creates as the engine goes from hot to cold, we have condensation, and that equals about half of a teaspoon. So the way to get the water out of the oil is one of two ways. Change the oil. That's a bad idea. Just go drive it. Take it to Flagstaff, and don't be afraid if the needle is between a quarter and three quarters, and the higher the better. Just be prepared to pull over if it gets into the red. That's how it works. It's just that simple. Our industry in right now, we've got tires. In the old days, tires used to last 15, 20,000 miles. Today, you know and I know that tires will last 40 and 50,000 miles with no problem. The front tires will wear out sooner than the back tires, because the front tires steer the car. So when you turn the car right and left, you're kind of scrubbing off a little bit of the tread. Where the back tires on your car, they follow the front tires. So they're not leaning and turning. They're just following the front. That's why we want you to rotate your tires. So if you get your tires and you buy them from like Discount Tire or wherever you happen to buy them, go in for a tire rotation every, 8 to 12,000 miles, with the 10 being the average. So at 10,000 miles, you go in and have them rotate the tires. Why do we rotate the tires? It's simple. The front tires steer, and when they do, they lay kind of over on the edge. So when you turn right, we're going to wear the outside edge of the right front tire, and when you turn left, we're going to wear the outside edge of the left front tire. Because the way the dynamics of the alignments are, that's what happens. Well, we don't want to wear those tires out because the back ones are brand new and all they do is follow. So there's no edge wear on the back ones. So the reason we rotate the tires is because we have edge wear on the front and the backs are just as square can be. That's what it's all about. That's why you rotate your tires. And then it's normal to have a little bit of outside edge wear on the front tires because the tire kind of lays over as you turn right and lays over as you turn left. So the top of the tire on a right turn, when you make a right turn, the top of the tire goes out and it wears that left front just a little bit. There's nothing we can do about it, but that's why you're supposed to rotate your tires. Is get the fronts, put them on the back, get the backs and put them on the front. That's it. We're done. And you can have your tire guy do that for you. You can have your garage do it. Some of the quick lube facilities will do it. All of those guys will do it as well. So those are kind of the maintenance tips, but don't go crazy. And remember, by the way, I should give a phone number, 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or a car problem. 602-508-0960, because we're at 960 The Patriot, KKNT. It's important to understand that your owner's manual is written for you and your car. And it's not good for anybody to suggest that you need to deviate from that owner's manual because we live in Arizona, because there's lots of cars that are delivered to Arizona, but that same owner's manual pretty much is across the board. The owner's manual is written no matter if you're from New York, from San Diego, from Washington to Florida, and anything in between, the manual is written for everybody. So it's not something that we have to change our lifestyle to accomplish. 602-508-0960. One of the other sad things is there's just so much information, misinformation from shops who are starving to death because cars of today need about one-tenth of the maintenance that the cars of yesterday did. So we're not doing spark plugs at 10,000. We're doing them at 100,000. We're doing cooling systems work at 80,000 instead of 30,000 miles. We're doing brakes at 50 and 60,000 instead of 25,000 miles. You see the difference. So just be careful. But we'll come back, 602-508-0960, and we'll be here for another hour and a half. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, we had a gentleman call in and ask about some alignment stuff, and I'm more than happy to answer those questions. 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, you can. 602-508-0960. He asked about tire wear and front-end alignments, and I can explain that to you pretty simple. I want you to pretend like you're sitting in the driver's seat of the car, okay? You're sitting in the driver's seat. Both front tires should be straight up and down. Otherwise, the top of the tire should not lean out, nor should the top of the tire lean in when you go straight down the road. It's important for us to get that tire to stand straight up and down because we need to wear the tread flat. If the top of the tire is out to the left, the driver's front tire, the top of the tire is out, and we're talking degrees, which is the thickness of about four pieces of paper, okay? So the top of the tire is leaning out. It's going to wear the outside edge of that tire, and you'll know it. So when you look at the tires, you automatically know that's camber. So the top of the tire has to be directly above the bottom of the tire. The tire has to stand straight up. However, when you turn, we need to lay the tire over just a little bit to get you to turn. Otherwise, you'd have a heck of a time. So, and that's caster. So you have camber is the top of the tire and the bottom of the tire are sitting right on top of one another. It's a vertical line. It's a perfect vertical line. But as you look at the side of the tire as if it's the face of the clock, the axis point is top center and bottom center. But caster is like a bicycle tire that sticks out in front of the bicycle. So there's these different angles cause different things. I'll give you an example. Camber, if the camber is out, the outside edge of the tire or the inside edge of the tire will wear aggressively. If you have too much caster, then the outside edge of the tire will wear as well. But Castor, the symptom of too little Castor is this. You're driving down the road, and you know how when you turn your car, you turn left, and you let go of the steering wheel, and it straightens right up? If Castor's out, then the car won't straighten up. You have to turn and then straighten it up yourself. Turn and straighten it up yourself. And toe in and toe out is the front dimension across the car. It's tire to tire and the back dimension. So I'll give you an example. Let's pretend it's in an exaggerated way. It's 6 feet in the front and it's 6.5 feet in the back. The tires are pigeon-toed at this point because the dimension between the front of the right front and the front of the left one is different and less than the backside of the tire. So now you're driving down the road with the front tires pigeon-toed, and that will aggressively wear your tires. We have instrumentation and alignment equipment that allows us to really, we can cut a piece of paper in half. You know what I mean? We can take a sheet of paper and take a razor blade and cut it into two pieces of paper. We're talking about a thousandth of an inch. We're talking about degrees. We can get really close. The front tire wear will tell us what's wrong with the car. If you have outside edge wear, then it could be upper ball joints or lower ball joints, upper ball joints, or it could be upper control arm bushings. If you have the front's feathered, then it's going to be a toe-in and toe-out problem. So we need to get the front tires parallel to one another and stop being pigeon-toed. And if we have too much camber on one side and perfect on the other side, then the one side's going to have aggressive wear on either the inside or the outside of the tire. And sometimes, but not always, that tire wear can be adjusted with an alignment. But if you've got a ball joint that's bad, which is the ball joint is the pivot point of the front tires, if the ball joint is bad, you can't align the bad ball joint out. You can't do that. The window might be 3 inches, but the ball joint is 5 inches. So no matter where you put the needle in your alignment setup, you're out of spec. So that's how we know what's going on. But it's also an opportunity for those shops that want to sell stuff to sell you a lot of front-end work that you may not need. Your front-end work that you need is going to be visible on the tire and the tread wear of the tire. It'll be visible. If all you've got is a little outside edge wear on the front tires and you're told you need a bunch of alignment work, you need to go someplace else and get a second opinion. Because if you leave the front tires and the back tires where they are for 20,000 miles, the back tires are going to be nice and square. And the front tires, the outer edges, are going to be a little rounded. We know that you left them on the front too long. We can see it. But the repair is not to align your car. The repair is to get those tires on the back, get the fronts on the back, and the back on the fronts. That's it. We're done. That's all that needs to be done. On the other hand, oftentimes you'll see a real aggressive inside edge wear from the front tires, where the inside edge looks like it's gone 50,000 miles and the outside edge has gone 10,000 miles. So you can clearly see a wear pattern that's developing that's just not completely perfect at all. Well, the inside is usually upper control arm bushings or ball joints. So you're going to have to fix that to get the tire to stand straight up again. So those are the kinds of things that you're going to have to do. Here's kind of a key. If you're looking for a shop in your general area, you can go to my website, marksalem.com, and I have a lot of good shops listed. But you can also call one or two or three of the local parts stores, and this is how the conversation sounds. Hi, I just moved into town. I live at 38th Avenue and Bethany Home Road. And you're in the general area. What shop should I go to? Who's been around a long time? Who doesn't play games? Who has good technicians? Who pays their bills to you guys on time? Can you tell me the name of that shop, or maybe give me the name of two shops in your area that you would send your mother or your father to? When you call the auto parts guys, they know who pays their bills. They know who tries parts on and returns them, and that just wads their underwear up something fierce. You take an air conditioning compressor, you put it on the car, that doesn't fix the car, you put it back in the box and give it back to the auto parts store. They know what you did. They know you just tried their part on. They know that you just completely screwed up their ability to sell that part to somebody else, and they're going to be mad at you. But that's what there's at least a third of our industry, maybe 25 to 30% of our industry that does that on a regular basis. And this is the point, like my shop, if we order a part and it comes with a box that's open, we just send it back and say, give us a box that's closed. Because somebody's already tried this part on. And so if they contaminated it with the wrong refrigerant or if they didn't use the right refrigerant oil in the compressor, I don't want to have to pay the price. So just send me another one, please. That's how it works. 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, have a car question, 602-508-0960. If you're going to talk about a shop and you're unhappy with the shop, don't use their names. Let's just talk about Joe's Garage or something like that. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. Let me see my clock here. It's 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We're going to be here until noon talking about cars. If you'd like to join us, you can. You just have to call us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. There's shops in town that I tell you about. It's because I've known them for a long time. Chuck Nyday owns Automotive Dynamics. I've known Chuck since the early 70s, and he's been family-owned and operated in Sun City since 1982. He's on north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. North side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. He's a good guy. He's just the only one I can recommend in the Sun City area. Others have applied. Others have sent me letters and notes and stuff like that. But there's a certain criteria I need to be able to say something nice about a shop. I need the shop to be in business a long time, have a clean Better Business Bureau record, have really good reviews, have ASE certified technicians. I need the owner to be on site some of the time. So those are the criteria. But Auto Dynamics is a great place in Sun City. JR, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Yeah, just a question of like preventive maintenance at the same time. If it's not broken, why fix it? In question is 120,000 miles on a 2014 Nissan Frontier, and you're talking about spark plug changes. I think they have some kind of a electronic device as opposed to spark plugs, or am I wrong? Because there's nothing wrong, but preventive maintenance, you try to change it out anyways, the spark plug device?
No. I think what you're talking about is instead of having one coil that provides spark to 4 spark plugs, 6 spark plugs, or 8 spark plugs, we now have these little bitty coils that sit on top of each spark plug, and the computer fires the coil, which fires the spark plug. So I think that's what you're talking about. 100,000-mile spark plugs are good for 100,000 miles. They're different than we had in the 60s and 70s. The electricity is different. I'll give you an example. In the 60s and the 70s, if you got bit by a spark plug wire, it was just shake your hand and laugh, okay? Today, you get bit by one of those spark plug wires, you're likely to wet your pants. It hurts, okay? So we went from 15 to 20K, 1,000 volts, to 100,000 volts. Not too much amps, but enough to get your attention. So, and then we also, we change the power in the ground in the spark. Before, we used to wear the heck out of the center electrode of the spark plug. Instead of being a nice square tabletop, it was rounded. Now we switch the electronics and we wear on both sides. And so it's just altogether different. Plus the spark plugs of today, they'll easy go 100,000 miles. What we don't want to do is we don't want to go 120, 130, 140 because sometimes they get galled in the threads and you have a tough time getting them out. Sometimes you have to pull all the boots off of the spark plug. You have to saturate it with some very thin oil and then you got to work the spark plug out in 3 days from now. And that happens about once a month at my shop where we get a car that just went too long between a spark plug change. So that 100,000 mile works really well. If that's what it says in the owner's manual, you should stick pretty close to that.
Okay. And I guess the same thing. As long as you're changing the spark plug, you don't have to worry about that little coil, so to speak, energy-wise. Do you try to change them both together or... is that normative policy?
My shop, I wouldn't go with that. I don't want to do that. First of all, let me change your question. Mark, with those coil over ignition systems where the coil sits on the spark plug, how often do you replace a coil? We got a 20 base shop. We do 30 cars a day, and we might replace a coil two or three times a year.
Wow. Okay.
So
that
now, but wait.
Question.
Okay, wait a minute. But in the boot, I want you to buy a tube of dielectric grease. Dielectric grease, and you're going to put half of what you put on your toothbrush, half of that in the boot. Then when okay. you put the boot on the spark plug, you wiggle it left and right. You've just sealed it from moisture, you've sealed it from contamination, and you've made it really easy for the next guy to get the boot off. It's not baked to the spark plug. And that little tube of dielectric grease will cost you $4.
Okay, excellent, excellent. Yeah, I'm waiting for the weather to get a little bit warmer, and then I'm going to try it, as you're suggesting, or change out the plug, and hopefully the other people that have touched the car have followed your instructions, but I don't think so, but I hope so.
Well, it's going to have a little bit of grease coming from the factory, and I don't know if somebody changed the plugs at 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, whatever, whatever. But the here's the worst thing that's going to happen, okay? You can't get the boot off, and so you end up having to cut it off. Okay, so that's a coil and a boot you're going to have to replace, and hopefully not all of them. The second thing is when you start to take the spark plug out, lefty-loosey, righty-tighty, it won't move. So then you're going to put it all back together, and you're going to put some oil inside. You're going to drip oil down alongside the spark plugs where it kind of wicks into the threads, and you're going to run that through three or four heat cycles, and then you're going to try to get it out.
Okay.
If you can't get it out and you break it off in there, your bill at my shop just went to $1,000.
Oh, hello.
Yeah. So you better not take it to a shop after you break the spark plug trying to get it out. There's only a 1 in 10 chance you'll have that problem. But don't go past just I can't get it out. Take it someplace and have them get it out. Okay.
Okay. There's that spray stuff, that B breaker or so. I forget the name of the product. But it's like an aerosol spray, is that good enough to spray down in that spark plug there? And just in case I'm having one jam in there, let it sit, like you said, for a couple of cycles.
WD-40 works. WD-40.
Okay.
So you're going to put your wrench on there, and you're going to go lefty-loosey, and it's going to go kind of tight. So you down there by the threads. Then you're going to go right and then left and right and left and left and right and left and right. And you're going to move it back and forth. And then all of a sudden you're going to feel, oh, well, that made a change, and it'll come right out.
Okay, cool. Excellent.
Okay?
Thank you.
All right, you bet. 602-508-0960. We're going to go till noon, so we've got plenty of time. If you have a car question or a car problem, you can. Action Auto Repair is at I-17 in Deer Valley, and he's been in business since 1983, and I knew Tom before he went into business, so I'm going to say early 1983. He knows right from wrong. He's a good guy. He's not going to let his technicians BS him. They're not going to tell him something he knows isn't true. That's the way it is for all shop owners that are on my list. We're smart enough to know the difference between right and wrong. And the last thing we want to do is hire some technician to come in and sell everybody everything to enhance the technician's, his paycheck. All these shop owners know the difference between right and wrong. And so Tom is no different. He has ASE-certified technicians. Those are guys that have passed all 8 automotive tests. That's the highest level certification you can have. So when you're a master tech, as I am, then you're the top of the heap. And you have tested in every aspect of the car, from the transmission, air conditioning, engines, fuel delivery, spark delivery, front end, brakes, everything. You have certified in all of those. So Action Auto Repairs at I-17 in Deer Valley, the northwest corner, and he's a really good guy. We don't have anybody?
Nope, lines are open.
Okay, and I'll tell you another shop in town that's a good guy is Tom Blackwell at 40th Street and Greenway. Tom and I are cut from the same cloth. We're a little ornery. We think we know it all. My mother always said that too. But we're really good at what we do. Tom has a family car division in his shop, but then he has a vintage car division in his shop. So no matter what kind of car you have, whether it's a brand new car or whether it's a car that's 30, 40, 50, 60 years old, Tom can work on both of those. It's important to find somebody that can do that, and you're not going to find a kid who has 3 whiskers on his chin that just graduated high school that's going to work on your 65 Corvette. he's not going to have the fundamental knowledge that us old gray hair guys have, because he wasn't even around when points and condensers and carburetors were there. So that's why you have to find these kinds of people. Blackwell's, he's good, 40th Street and Greenway, and he's a friend of mine. All these guys, we're friends. Every single shop I've talked to you about is somebody that I've been friends with for years and years and years. And so that's kind of what's important. But car repair, the self-defense for car expense, this is the default. When you take your car in for something, oil change, and they start talking and telling you all the things that are wrong, you have to hold up your hands and you say, you know what, I'll never remember all of this. I need you to write it down and then staple your business card to the work order. You see, because if they're not telling you the truth, they'll never write it down, and they'll never sign it, and they'll never attach their business card to it. So they've told you what you want to know. On the flip side of that same coin, the really good shops are going to say, hey, have you got an extra 20 minutes? Because right now, I'll walk you outside and show you what I'm talking about on your car. I'll show you what's wrong with your car. I'll show you where you need to look at something 6 months from now. I'll do that. That's the difference. And we have a caller. Who might that be?
Say good morning to Larry.
Larry, good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I'd like to check, see if you can assist me a little bit about RVs. Do you handle stuff in the way of RVs?
Well, let me tell you about my RV experience. I've driven an RV every north and south highway in the United States, from Highway 1 on the West Coast to Highway 95 on the East Coast. I've driven every east and west highway from 10 in the south to 90 to the north. Do I qualify?
I would think so, yes.
Okay, and I can help you with your RV.
Typically what I do is when I buy an RV, I put solar panels on the roof.
Okay.
And I just recently purchased a Class A, and I had the two 100-watt solar panels put on. And I wasn't able to get it into a dealer someplace because of 2 to 3 weeks, almost a month in waiting time. So one of the roving type RV mechanics put it on for me. It wasn't programmed correctly, and it ended up cooking my deep cell 6-volt batteries and killed them. They were less than a year old. And now, it's also killed by circuit boards for the tank controls, where you check the water on levels on your tank.
Yes. And your monitor panel. That's called your monitor panel?
Yeah, the monitor panel. And then a dealer was checking it out and said that it's also fried by refrigerator board. And I'm at a loss as to finding somebody qualified that can handle solar panel installations
okay.
and the associated electrical hookup.
Okay, okay. What kind of RV do you have?
It's a 2006 Fleetwood Storm.
Okay, okay. Sun City RV would be one of the places that I would send you to.
Okay.
And Blackwell would look at it for you. Tom Blackwell, Blackwell Automotive.
Tom Blackwell?
Yeah.
Blackwell Automotive?
Yeah, it would be worth a call. And Kurtz Automotive. Now,
Kurtz Automotive.
Yeah, then let me explain something to you. This is a lesson for everybody, that the guys that drive around and provide this kind of service and express themselves as being experts just cost you a whole lot of money. So
yeah,
there's a lesson to be learned here, because let me put it as blunt as I can tell you. If he was that good, that SOB would be working for me for $80,000 to $100,000 a year, and he wouldn't be in his pickup truck handing out flyers to people because he's really good. He wouldn't. Another thing I want you to do is this is defective workmanship, and I want you to report it to the insurance company for your motorhome. This is damage to your vehicle by others. Damage to your vehicle by others. Not that they're going to go chase this guy down, but they might. But you need to you need to call them first, make a claim, and see if they have a recommendation. But I've given you my three. I'm 50 seconds away from having to take a break. We're going to be back for a second hour, by the way, so if you want to stay with me, you can. But report it to your insurance company, describe it, give them all the paperwork, give them the recommendations from the guys that have already had a chance to look at it. But the other thing is you're either going to go to the dealer or one of those RV places I told you about. If you bought it here locally, I'd probably take it back to the dealer that I bought it from, and I'd have my insurance involved, and the insurance company would probably pay this bill. I'm pretty sure they're going to pay this bill because this is damage to your coach by others. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. One more time, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. It's 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and I want to talk real quick to Larry, who just talked. I talked to him about his RV. He had somebody install solar panels that was working out of the back of his truck, and all of a sudden he's got electrical problems. My wife just called me during the break, and she said, "What's the matter with the RV store that we know about?" And she's right. Sport Truck RV, Larry. That one with the solar panel issues, I want you to remember this, Sport Truck RV, and talk to Paul. They are capable of fixing your problem. They install solar panels, so they know the system, and clearly he wired it incorrectly. It's probably not going to be a matter of repositioning or working on the solar panels. It's going to be the electronics that he screwed up. So Sport Truck RV is in Chandler, and you're going to talk to Paul, who's the service guy there, and also a salesman there, and that's who I know real well. And I'm not making any money on your referral or on this so-called commercial. I'm just giving you the best advice I can give you. So Sport Truck RV in Chandler is certainly, I'm going to move them to the top of the list with respect to fixing the problem with your solar panels, and then replacing all the circuit boards that got blown up by the installation of the solar panels. Jim, good morning. Jim and Tim, you stay there, Tim. Jim, you're first. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Good. I had a learning experience Thursday. I'm 75, and I came out of the doctor's office, and there was an old gray-haired man, and he asked if I could jump his car for him. And I said, sure. So I got everything all hooked up and everything, and he turned it over, and it cranked once, and then it was dead. So, and this is after letting it run for about 3 or 4 minutes so it would charge up. So he said he asked if I could take him up to his mechanics, which was only a mile away, and talk to them. So I drove him up there, and they sent a mechanic over. He had like a backpack, which a battery unit,
uh-huh.
And he hooked that up, and it cranked over twice, and then it went dead. So we're kind of scratching our heads there, and a gentleman pulled up in a truck, got out, came up with a little device the size of a transistor radio with some clamps on it, clamps it on the battery, and the thing started right up. And I thought, what is that? Because I thought, I thought I knew everything. And he says it's a battery jumper. And he said he got it on Amazon for $70. And he says it's just awesome. And he explained to me how it works. And it was an Eagle Boost.
Uh-huh.
And I never had seen anything like that before. Is that pretty common?
Oh, I have five of those.
Yeah, okay. I think I'm going to get one.
Well, and here's the deal. A fully charged battery, 12-volt battery, is at 13 volts, okay? 13 is fully charged. 12 volts is only 50% charged, so 13 volts. When you hit a key, the battery voltage, if there's a meter on the jumper box, so to speak, we can't drop below 9.6. We just can't. Well, what happens is somebody grabs those things off the shelf in the shop and goes out and tries to start the car, but nobody plugged it in for the last 3 days or 3 weeks.
But these
new ones are lithium, and those are the big dogs. And like you say, I've started diesels with this box that's no bigger than a lunch pail. And so,
wow.
If you like that, then the key is keep it plugged in. and use it every once in a while. You know, there's times where I'll use it to fire up something in the motorhome, or I'll use that jumper box to run the refrigerator for a while just to exercise it, because we need to yo-yo the battery. We start off at 13 volts, that's fully charged, and then it'll drop to about 9.69, and then we need to yo-yo that thing back up to 13 volts. So just keep it plugged in. But what you've seen is new technology, and I'm quite sure it's a lithium battery and these things. But they're also very dangerous, because if you get them hot, they'll burn. And there has been people that have said that they will explode, but not a violent explosion that kills people. It's just that the battery itself will explode. So be careful. Follow the directions. But, yes, I know what you're talking about.
Well, it was just amazing that something that little could have enough power to start a car, you know, whereas the mechanic and I couldn't get it going. So it was just... it was amazing.
Yeah, so. And again, they'll do diesels, and diesels usually have two big batteries, and so it those batteries, but they don't. Here's what they don't have: they don't have long term. You can't really plug that thing in and run a light bulb in your tent for 12 hours. It gives a whole lot of electricity for a pretty long amount of time, but it's not. That's what a car battery is supposed to do. The batteries in your flashlight give a little bit of electricity for a long period of time. This gives a whole bunch of electricity for a short period of time. That's the difference between flashlight batteries and the one you talked. Okay?
Thanks, Mark. Have a good week.
And to you, Jim. Thank you. Tim, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
I have kind of a nightmare. I'd like to see if there's anything I can do about this. I have a 2002 Ford pickup truck, four-wheel drive, 150. I originally was pulling a trailer with it that was a little bit too heavy, and it blew the engine up.
Okay.
Evidently, it overheated. So I took it to this place. I don't know if I can say the name or not.
No. No.
Can I say the name? This engine rebuilding shop in Glendale, and they rebuilt it. It would cost me about $44,000. They said it has a 2-year warranty on it, and the truck, the engine had overheated again while I was pulling up a hill from Payson with a much lighter trailer. So I'd been going all the way through Colorado. I probably put 10,000-11,000 miles on it. It didn't have any problems with it. So the owner of the engine shop told me that I let it overheat, but I had no indication whatsoever that my engine temperature, everything was fine. It was just going up this hill. All of a sudden, I hear this kind of. I knew I was losing power, and there was some problem. So
okay, and how much did he charge you to rebuild your engine?
$4,000.
Say it again.
$4,000.
Oh, $4,000. Okay, I thought you said $54,000. Okay, all right.
Oh no.
Okay, well. So what are you going to do?
Well, I've had it there since September. You know, it's an extra truck, but I'd like to get my truck back. And he said, well, I'm going to have to charge you for this because it's not under warranty. Well, you know, I'm not a genius, but, you know, the engine blew up while I had it. I just had the oil change and all the fluids changed to Jiffy Lube. And all of a sudden, he says it overheated, which I guess it did. I don't know. It didn't have any.
Okay. All right. Well, this is ground we've covered before. This is ground we covered before. Okay. First of all, $4,000, and it's a V8.
Yeah, it's 5.4.
Okay. I wouldn't have touched that engine for less than $10,000. So I don't know what you got for $4,000, and frankly, yeah. I'm right in the middle of the market. I mean, I know I'm in the middle of the parts market. I know I'm in the middle of the labor market, and I don't know what you got, but I'm not impressed. I think
okay.
And when you can't haul a trailer that's bigger than what you should haul. That's your fault. But on his side, he's come to the conclusion that you overheated it again. But did he show you are the cylinders, did this pistons come apart? Did the cam lose its, I mean, what's he showing you? Did anybody replace the fan clutch? Did anybody replace the radiator? Is there 50-50 coolant in it? Did it ping? Did you ever hear it ping? Did you ever hear it rattle? Was there any check engine lights? There's all this missing. And so the only thing I can tell you is I think you should get it out of there and take it someplace else. I think you need to take it someplace else, but you're going to spend a whole bunch more money because $4,000 isn't anything. Hell, the labor's probably $2,500 to take the motor out and put it in. So what'd they do for $1,000 or $1,500? What did they do? So I don't know, but let me tell you something. Your gauge needs to work, and you need to verify that it works. And when you're towing a trailer, you can flirt with the 3/4 mark, but you can't flirt with the red zone on the red hot mark. So there's nothing wrong with. And I haul horses, and I haul big trailers, gooseneck trailers, 3-axle trailers. And I'm hauling with a 1-ton Dodge truck, and I'm running on the 3/4 mark between 3/4 and full on the gauge, but I don't let it get into the red, and I know it's going to be okay. So I don't know what – see, overheat to you means overheat differently from 20 guys. We line them up, and everybody has a different idea of overheat. Overheat is needle in the red. That's an overheat. It's not the 3/4 mark, and it's not past the half mark. Overheat, or you're spitting steam out from underneath the hood, and you're spitting water on the ground. That's an overheat. So you got to get it out of there.
Yeah, I mean, I had no evidence. I mean, just other than it started losing power.
Well, you got two choices. You can have yours rebuilt, which I'm not playing in that barnyard at all. I'm just not, and a whole lot of other guys. If you tell them that story, they're going to bail on it too. I'm going to put a rebuilt engine in there and be done with it. But what, you know, are you going to pay to have somebody do an autopsy on the old motor to find out what happened, and then you're going to hire experts at $250 an hour to testify about the oil and about the machine shop and about this and about that? No, you're not going to do that. Just suck it up, learn your lesson, and go get another motor.
Okay. I think that this guy was just, his prices were too cheap. He's been in business for quite a while, and he's got a lot of trucks there.
1 minute.
Which is really, I don't know, it's surprising. I did get a quote for $8,000 from Pep Boys, and I said, well, I'm going to shop around, see if I can get a better price.
Well, Pep Boys was probably going to sell you a motor that was pre-manufactured out of the Midwest, like most of us do. And the $8,000 in Pep Boys' world is, and I already told you, this is a $10,000 to $12,000 motor replacement. Now, $10,000 to $12,000, take the old motor out, transfer the components to the new motor, put the new motor in, all the hoses, all the belts, all the fluids, all the spark plugs, all the wires, all that stuff. That's the $10,000 to $12,000 motor. But, you know, you can, after it's all over with, whoever takes it out, you can look at it. If you want, you can write a nice review or a bad review. All I'm telling you is the $4,000 should have chased you away from him at the very beginning, because that's just not even a realistic price. But I got to run. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If it's too good to be true, it typically is. I've been working on cars in the Valley, in Tempe, pretty much since 1968. And I opened my own shop. I was a policeman in Scottsdale for the 70s, and in the late 70s, I opened up the mobile station in Ahwatukee. And then from there, we've morphed into a 20-bay repair facility in Tempe. I don't say the name of my shop because that's not what I'm supposed to be doing here. I'm supposed to be helping you with your car problems. I'm not supposed to be stumping my chest, telling everybody how great my shop is, and trying to get you to come to do business with us. The other day I had my daughter run a query on our computer system that I actually wrote the software for, and I just said, I want to know where the predominant customers are. We have 35,000 customers. So she calls back and she says, guess. And I said, just tell me. And she says, no guess. I said, okay, Tempe, Ahwatukee, Mountain Park Ranch, and Chandler. She says, you hit it. She says, 92% of the customers we have are from that geographical area. And I said, okay. She says, here's something important. We've got customers that have been doing business with us for 39 years. And she says, Mrs. Althea is a good example. Her customer number is 6, and we're at 35,000. Those are the kinds of things that you're looking for when, and there's plenty of shops just like mine in the city of Phoenix, in Peoria, Mesa, Tempe, Chandler, all over the place. All you have to do is just do a little bit of homework on the internet. Anyway, 602-508-0960. All five lines are open, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. We just got done talking with Tim, and he had taken his Ford truck, and he had overheated it. He admitted he was pulling the trailer up and down the mountains that was a little bigger than he should. He took it to a shop. They charged him $4,000. They gave him a two-year warranty, and on one of his trips, it overheated again, and now the engine's bad again, and the shop says you have to pay for it. So, there's quite a few guys that have my cell phone number, and so they comment on callers and stuff. And one of them, that's a good friend of mine and a well-respected technician, he said, folks, when we do a rebuild engine, we usually put a heat tab and we glue it to different parts of the engine. Most of the time it's to a freeze plug. The heat tab will melt when the engine gets in distress. What that tells us is you did take it into a heat range that you should not have. So Eddie writes, heat tabs will indicate an overheat on that Ford motor. What he's saying is that if that rebuilder that charged him $4,000 for his rebuild, if he put heat tabs on there, those heat tabs will tell us one of two things. Number one, this motor has been overheated, or this motor failed and it has not been overheated. So the heat tab placement, where they're at and what they look like, will add some information on why this engine failed. But if the heat tabs show that the engine has gone into a temperature range it should not have, then the person with his hands on the steering wheel is the problem. They're the ones that are going to pay this bill. Likewise, if they're saying that you overheated it but the heat tabs are intact, then somebody's lying. That's how it works. Jeffrey, good morning. How can I help you this morning?
Hey, thank you, sir. I got a 05 Pontiac Grand Prix that had kind of a whining sound to it.
Okay.
And to me, it sounded electrical. It didn't sound mechanical. And so when I was test driving it, went to start it up, it had a hard time a little bit starting up. And it threw like a little, I don't know, like a warning message saying charging system failed.
Okay.
And so, obviously, first thing I did is went and had the battery tested. Battery came back okay. And sometimes it has the problem, sometimes it doesn't. Right? Like, to me, the next thing I want to try to chase down is testing the alternator. I'm just curious, if it goes any further, what would your next course of action be if the alternator seems to be okay?
Well, I would carry a screwdriver with me at all times. And how often do you hear the noise?
You know what? It's my fiance's car, so I haven't driven it a bunch. It's happened about once a day, though, the last few days.
Okay. Well, if you can hop out of the car and pop the hood, and it's squealing, or you can have her just get in and start it, and you got the hood open, and if you touch the alternator with that screwdriver, you'll be able to feel if that alternator's got a bad bearing in it. I don't think it's a matter where the alternator is not charging. I think that if the noise is related to the RPMs of the engine, otherwise it's squealing, and then when you rev it up, it goes, well, that means it's moving with the RPM of the engine. Another thing you can do is if you can get it to squeal, spray it with a hose. Spray the alternator with a hose. If the noise goes away, then you need to replace the belt, and that's the only thing you need to do. But okay. If the noise doesn't go away, then you need to replace the alternator.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know for a fact it's been on my to-do list for, is I know that belt is really old. I just looked at it recently and about crap my pants. So I know I need to replace that anyway.
Well, and here's the deal. When you start the car up and you rev it up, a bad fan belt will squeal then. And you rev it up and it squeals and it squeals and it squeals. You rev it fast. You hit the throttle fast and let go and it'll squeal. If you continue to drive it, it'll get so hot that it'll stop squealing and it goes away. Now, a bearing in the alternator won't go away. It stays there forever. So if I were you, I would, you know what you ought to do? You ought to just take it by some repair shop and say, would you take a look at my belts? I'm told that the alternator, or I'm told my, I need fan belts. And if they open up the hood and they look at your shoestring alternator belt and they start laughing, there's your answer.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
You bet.
Thank you.
You bet. It's okay to do that, but when you go to an auto shop and you just want them to look at something quick, you're not going to get good service on Monday mornings and Friday afternoons for obvious reasons. We're just trying to open the week and close the week. So it's not likely we're going to send a, you know, one or two technicians out into the parking lot and jabber with you for a half an hour. The idea is that you can do that, but just be considerate of their time. I've got a noise. I can make it happen, and it doesn't happen all the time. Could you have a technician just, I'll lift the hood and I'll start it up and make it happen, and the technician can see what it is, or, and then I'll have you fix it. That's kind of the conversation us shop owners like to hear from our clients and our customers, is that kind of thing. Obviously on Monday mornings and Friday afternoons is a really tough time, but I'll tell you something else. Right now, we're all booked weeks in advance. Everybody's booked weeks in advance. The dealers, the independent, the specialty shops, the oil change shops, the tire shops, everybody's booked. And I don't have an explanation for it. I can only just tell you that sometimes it'll take you a week to 10 days to get into many of the shops that I know who owns them, and including my own. Sometimes we are just busier than we know what to do with. And that's hopefully, that's why you have a relationship with the shop. If you want a shop, and you want one of my good shops, then go to marksalem.com. Mark with a K, Salem like the cigarette, S-A-L-E-M, marksalem.com, and click on Best Car Repair Shops. That's my list of shops in the valley that I know the owners. I know they've been in business 20, 30, 40 years. I know they're honest. I know they have good technicians, and I feel very comfortable referring people from the radio show and personal friends of mine to a shop in North Phoenix or West Phoenix or East Mesa or whatever, but because I just know that they know what they're doing and they're good-hearted people, and they're not going to rebuild your engine for $4,000 where everybody else would be $10,000 to $12,000. So if it's too good to be true, it typically is. 602-508-0960. We have five lines available. Gil's the one that's answering the phone, so he'll say, KKNT, do you want to talk to Mark? And if you say yes, then he'll say, give me your name. And then he'll whisper in my ear. He'll say, hey, Fred's on the line next, or something like that. So that's kind of how it works. 602-508-0960. I've been doing radio in the Phoenix market since 1988. I don't say the name of my shop because the very first guy I worked for, his name was Jim Tazarak. He said to me, son, if you think that you're going to come in here, because they ask me to come to the radio show and do a car show, if you think you're going to come in here and thump your chest for 30 minutes or an hour at a time and tell everybody how great you are, you got another thing coming. You're not the guy. I said, I understand what you're saying. What is my job? And he goes, take car calls, talk to them, ask them the appropriate questions, and then try to give them guidance and send them someplace. But you're not allowed to thump your chest and tell everybody what the name of your shop is and send everybody that calls to your shop, which happens to be in Tempe. And I said, I understand that. Well, he was smarter than anybody that I had ever met, because he understood that when you go on the radio and you thump your chest, that's really bad, and people see right through that. That's exactly the reason since 1988 I've never said the name. I haven't never said. Sometimes I'm pinned down and I have to say it. But I go days, weeks, and months, and lots of months without ever saying the name of my shop, because it's not important. What's important is your car questions and trying to give you guidance. And that's what they figured I'm good at. So if you'd like to join us, we have five lines available, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. You're listening to KKNT, The Patriot, in Phoenix, Arizona, if you're listening on any of the radio internet channels. And so we're headquartered out of Phoenix, and I'm sitting in Tempe right now in an auto repair shop that has a studio. So 602-508-0960, and we'll see you in just a few minutes. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Gil, have we got anybody in the wings?
No, lines are open.
Lines are wide open at 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We get lots of questions about oil, and I think I can clear up some oil questions for you real quick. In the old days, we had one kind of oil. It was called conventional oil. And it could be Chevron, Exxon, Mobil, Pennzoil, Valvoline. It could be whatever. That was a 3,000-mile oil. Today, we have three kinds of oils for your cars and your trucks and your diesels. We have conventional oil. That's not the cream of the crop. It's just a conventional oil that has basically a 3,000 to 5,000-mile oil change interval. It's not supposed to go 10,000 miles or 20,000 miles. It's 3 to 5,000. Then we have a semi-synthetic oil, which is a mixture of conventional and full synthetic. The question is it a 90-10 split or a 50-50 split? And you don't really know. The semi-synthetic goes from, if conventional is 3 to 5,000 miles, then semi-synthetic goes from 5 to 8,000 miles, and then full synthetic goes from 8 to 20,000 miles. So it just depends on what book you're looking at and what the oil manufacturer says and what your car says. But if you use a synthetic oil, like on my diesel truck, I run 10,000 miles. But my diesel truck holds like 14 quarts of oil, and I'm using a synthetic. So I feel comfortable, and I run oil analysis, and I'm well within the industry standards at 10,000 miles. And actually, I could go to 12 or 15,000 if I wanted to. I just feel like I don't want to. So I do change my oil a little early. And in your case, it's the same. Oil is also backward compatible. So if you have a 65 Corvette, you can put synthetic in it. And all the idea that synthetic's going to cause seal problems and your motor's not going to like synthetic, that's all bull. It was then, and it is now. Your engine has no idea what kind of oil you put in it. But it's just much better oil than the oil that it was built around back in the 60s or the 70s or the 80s. So, and it, as far as brand is concerned, there's really four companies that pull oil out of the ground and make engine oil, so it doesn't really make any difference. If you're going to go to Pep Boys or Napa or Auto CarQuest, just buy the cheapest stuff you can find in the category you want. I happen to pour Chevron at our shop, and so we buy Chevron. We don't buy it by the quarter. We buy it by the gallon. We have big tanks, 300-gallon tanks, that they come in and pump this oil in this tank, this oil in that tank, this oil in that tank. So I don't have to throw away the lids of the quarts. I don't have the plastic bottles to throw away. All I really have, I don't have the cardboard boxes. I don't have any byproducts of my relationship with my oil vendor. So many people have that same relationship. So you can also say to the, you know, if you're a customer of mine and you drive 5,000 miles a year, I'm going to put you in just a regular oil that covers 3 to 5,000 miles. If you go 10,000 miles a year, I'm going to put you in a semi-synthetic and I'm going to change your oil once a year. And if you're going to do more than that, I'm going to put you in a synthetic oil and change it once every 10, 15,000 miles. Those are the kinds of decisions that you can make, and your owner's manual gives you that ability. And your owner's manual of the newer model cars talks about the different oils. And you should stick pretty close to the category, whether it's conventional, semi-synthetic, or synthetic. So, and you can use conventional, which is the old 1960s and 70s and 80s oil, but you can put that in, and then you can go to a brand new Mobil 1 synthetic, and then you can go back to the old oil, and then go to a Mobil synthetic or a Chevron synthetic, because your engine's not going to know the difference. It's not going to just up and die because you changed the brand of oil or the weight of oil or the level of quality of oil. It's not going to know. It just doesn't know. Now, if you have an older car that's a little loose on the engine side, and it fouls a spark plug every now and then, you're not going to want to put a 0-20 weight synthetic in that. You're going to use a straight 30 weight oil for that. And so the 30 weight gives you protection in all the different temperature ranges that Phoenix and Tucson have that their patrons are in those categories. But if you're up in Flagstaff, you're up in Payson, you're up in Heber, you're up in the mountain countries, then you're going to want something that has a little lower viscosity so it'll flow on those cold mornings.
1 minute.
That's what we want. We want the oil to flow. And it changes viscosities in this respect. It doesn't go from water consistency, the peanut butter, because that's what everybody thinks that's happened. A 10-30 is water and a 30 weight is peanut butter. No, it's not that. It flows like a 10 weight when it's cold, and it flows like a 30 weight when it's hot. You see the difference? It flows like a 10 weight. It flows like a 30 weight. So we have 0-20 now. It flows like a 0 weight when it's cold, and it flows like a 20 weight when it's hot. 20 weight is more than sufficient for any cars that we have on the market today. And going back 10 years. I'll go back that far. So it's like this. Your engine, let's pretend it's a big mixer. It's kind of the mixer bowl that you put, you're going to make dough and you're going to make pie crust and stuff. Okay. If your engine is working and we're rubbing this oil all over the place and we're splashing oil all over the place, do you want peanut butter or water to cool everything down and provide lubrication? And the answer is clearly we want water, something with the consistency of water. We don't want peanut butter in our engines because it would take forever for us to get everything lubricated until we broke down that thick peanut butter into something that could be pumped through the engine like regular oil. So that's what it's all about. It flows like a 10 weight when it's cold, and it flows like a 30 weight when it's hot. That's the big difference. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And as far as the name brand is concerned, you know, you can do what I do. I just get the cheapest oil. If I'm out, I get the cheapest oil. I pour Chevron because I get a good deal on Chevron oil, and it is a top quality oil. But if I was in Flagstaff and wanted to change the tractor in one of my change the oil in one of my tractors, I just go to one of the auto parts stores and get some 30 weight and a diesel 30 weight, and I'd be fine. So 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 43 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. Gil, the reason why is because I forgot to put the break in my tape. So I was just going to give 3 seconds of nothing, and so that I knew where I was taking breaks. And folks, Gil's saying in my ear, where you at? Where you at? And that I'm explaining to him that I messed up and I needed to put a gap in the tape of the show. And
did you do it, Mark?
And I got it.
Okay.
I got it. I just have to reach over and push the button and take a break, and then I let go of the button. But anyway, there's two shops on my list of best car repair shops, and they're on the opposite sides of the valley. Strictly Diesel is up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. And when he says, Nate says, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, he says, and he means, Strictly Diesel. Now, if you have a car that you need an oil change on and you're getting ready to go on vacation, you can ask him to do an oil change. If he does other small work, but his focus is Chevrolet, Ford, and Dodge diesels. And I don't know anybody that's in his classification when it comes to just focusing on diesels. So if you've got a Ford, Chevy, or Dodge, and nobody else can fix it, and you have a whole bunch of your cowboy buddies telling you what to do, and you want somebody to diagnose it specifically, then you have to take it to Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Again, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, he's a good guy. Now, on the other side of town in Mesa, the only shop in Mesa I can send you to is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. He's been around since 1970. Brian and Thelma is a husband and wife. Brian runs the shop. Thelma runs the front office. And when you meet them and shake their hand and listen to them talk, you'll understand they're very well versed in car repair. They're the nicest people in the whole wide world. They understand the relationship between the customer and the shop. They have good technicians. And just recently, there was a storm in Mesa that took the roof off of half of their shop, and they're just now getting their wheels underneath them, and they're just starting to come out of the ashes of that bad storm. So if you're in Mesa and you're looking for a good shop, may I suggest Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, again, since 1970. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. Good people, good shop, and good, honest repair. When it comes to good, honest repair, I'm going to give you a little self-defense for car expense. When you take your car in, you should write down what you want them to say or to do. And you should make two copies, and you should give them one. I want you to talk to them in writing. When I start my car up in the morning, there's a squeal. When I rev the engine, the squeal changes with the RPMs of the engine. So when I start it up, it's squealing like crazy, but when I rev it up, the squeal gets louder. Okay, that's very helpful to us. By the way, I want you to look to see if I'm due for an oil change, and would you check my front tires for wear? Because I was at this facility not too long ago, and they told me I needed a complete alignment and front-end repair. Would you tell me what your opinion is? So check the tire wear, and then tell me what you think I need, and then put a price to it. Those are the kinds of conversations you should have with your shop. And you should do it in writing, because there's no excuse. There's no excuse for messing up something like that when it's in writing. We know exactly what the situation is. We know exactly what you want us to do. And the technician, so you get to talk directly to the technician, because that piece of paper is going to the technician in 99 out of 100 shops in the valley. So that's kind of important. You're not going to really get to talk to the technician. You're going to talk to a service writer who's going to have the ear of the technician. But you can also do a lot of that via email. So you can say to them, can I contact you, and I'll give you my email address, and you and I will communicate. It's a nice way to do it, so you have a log of your discussion. So the service writer says, you need a whole new front end, the front tires are showing abnormal wear, and you say, okay, we'll just put a number to everything I knew and tell me exactly what it is. Then maybe you take it someplace else and they go, I don't see any abnormal wear. This is an exaggeration, okay? I don't see any normal wear. You've only got 39,000 miles on this car. And so I don't see any need for all of this. They say that you need lower control arms. Do you hear a thump when you abruptly stop, or a thump in the front end when you take off? And the customer says, no. When you let go of this, when you turn right and kind of let go of the steering wheel, does the car straighten up all by itself? Yes. Okay, well, that means that the alignment's pretty doggone good. At any given time, does the car pull to the right or to the left? Well, when I go to work in the morning, it drifts a little right, but the road's also crowned to the right. But when I get home and I get in my neighborhood, then it goes straight down the road. Well, a highway is crowned. A highway is not flat. We're going to take the middle of the road and we're going to run the water to the outside edges of the road. So when you're on the highway, it's not uncommon for the car to drift to the right. Plus, that's kind of a good thing, because if you fall asleep, you're not going to go into opposing traffic. You're going to go off the road to the right if you fall asleep or pass out or be doing something stupid. So that's kind of how it all works. It has to do with symptoms analysis and symptoms from the customers and all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of important. And we have a caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to Nick.
Nick, good morning.
Morning, Mark. I got a 21 Chevy Colorado 2.8 diesel. That it for like 20 months. I'm about 10,000 miles short of the 150 where the timing belt change.
Okay.
You know about how many hours that should take?
No, but I'm betting that's going to be, it's going to be easy north of $500.
Yeah. Easy. So do timing belt, change the water pump?
Well, and you have 150,000 on this?
I got 138,000 right
okay,
now.
Okay, fair enough. That would be up to the customer. I would say, if you were my customer, I would say, if you want us to do it, we'll do it. I want you to know that maybe one out of every 30 water pumps we install come back because it leaks, or we made a mistake, or the bearing went bad, or whatever. So, but you know, if it comes back, we know it's our fault. We know that the part's defective, and it won't cost you anything. But if you feel comfortable that you're halfway, well, you're 80% to the water pump when you're doing the timing belt. So to do the time, if you do both of them separately, let's pretend you're going to have $500 to do the belt and $500 to do the water pump. And I'm just guessing with these numbers, but I'm using them for demonstration purposes. So if you do the water pump when it's there instead of 500, it's now 150. So
yeah,
there's a significant savings.
I've already had to replace the alternator already because the bearings went out on it.
Okay, so you're going to do the timing belt, and you're going to ask them to look at the cam and crank seals and make sure that there's no oil leaks in that area. And then you're going to do a cooling system flush because they're going to drain it anyway.
Yeah.
And then if there's a tensioner, a spring-loaded tensioner, or just an idler pulley, it's a good idea to replace those. So there'll be an idler pulley and a spring and a tensioner pulley, and I would replace those as well, because you've got 150,000 miles. You've been around the girth of the Earth six times.
Now the hoses for the radiator, just do those go start to get hard when it's because of they're old, or because of how many like engine miles or engine hours are on the motor?
I don't like the idea that we're going to squeeze a belt or a hose and tell you it's good or it's bad, because there's a whole lot of cars that get towed into my shop that have a nice, pliable, soft hose that's blown. And there's just no good way. In the old days, the harder the hose felt, the worse it was. But that isn't true, and it wasn't then either. So, again, they're going to take the lower hose off to do this job. There's no labor involved. It's only the price of the hose. Why wouldn't you do it?
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, ask them, what else can we do while we're there that's going to save me money? That's a great question. And he's going to say, lower hose, cooling system flush, water pump, tensioner of the timing belt, and an idler of the timing belt. We'll look at all of that. That's what he should say.
Now, earlier you were talking about overheating and stuff. This truck runs at about 197.
No problem. Absolutely, okay. No problem.
Okay.
So
and it's like
at 220, we're going to boil water. Okay, so 220.
Yeah, I've never seen it get up to 210 ever, and okay. That's pulling a trailer and stuff.
Okay, that's okay, but I'm just saying 220 and 230. People go panic crazy when they hit 220, 230, yeah. And I want to tell you something. I just brought my horses from Tempe and took them up to Payson the other day, and climbing that hill, there was some Ford that decided he wanted to go a little faster than I was going, so he pulled up next to me, and we're both well under the speed limit, so both of us decide we're just going to see who gets to the top of the hill first. And I look down, I'm running about 230 water temperature, so I'm thinking to myself, it's either beat him by a nose or let him win, but he doesn't know how many horses I have, and I don't know how many horses he's got, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But if I would have done that, I didn't do it, but if I would have done that and I hit 220, 230, it wouldn't have bothered me a bit. The red zone is in the 240 to 260 range. That's where you stay out of.
Okay. When would you start to get worried about the transmission fluid temperature?
Probably 250.
Okay, 250? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
because I've seen it in the summer pulling a little bit of weight, it would get up to like 210.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that. I'll tell you, it really depends on the fluid inside. If it's a conventional fluid, the 210, 220s, we're going to be in the area. But if it's a synthetic, and you can ask, this is the question, what's the oxidation temperature of your transmission fluid? You can get on the internet, go to Chevron, go to Valvoline, go to Dello, go to whoever you want, and just ask their technical people, what's the oxidation point of your transmission fluid? And they'll tell you, and that's when it burns to a solid. So you got to stay away from that number. And usually that number's north of 250, 260, 270.
Okay. You have a good weekend.
All right. Thank you, Nick. Thank you very much. My email is mark@marksalem.com. If you're going to ask me a car question, I'd like you, if you would give me a phone number and tell me what time's a good time to call you. I usually answer 90% of my emails by just responding appropriately, but sometimes you leave out stuff and I need to ask you questions. And if I call you, I'll tell you in advance. I'll call you tomorrow afternoon between 1 and 4. And I'll put it on my calendar, and when I call you, I'm going to call you from a blocked line. But when you answer the phone, the first thing I'm going to say is this is Mark Salem. I'm responding to your email about your dot, dot, dot. And then that way we can talk. So I obviously can't have my cell phone number get out, because then I would answer car questions for the rest of my life, and my wife would divorce me, and my kids would hate me, and my cowboy buddies would get mad because my phone's ringing off the hook and I'm on horseback. So I just, you can understand why my cell phone number is pretty private. But those are the options that you have available to you anytime you want. When it comes to car repair, you never ever should feel like you have to do something. If it drove in, it'll drive out. So if you get into, if you take your car into a shop and all of a sudden they're telling you all this bad stuff that's wrong with your car and you can't possibly drive it, and right now, you know, we're $750 to $950 to fix this problem, just remember, it drove in. It drove in. So I'm not suggesting that you hop in your car and go to Flagstaff and put your boat behind it. I'm just suggesting that if you drove it in, it'll drive out. And don't ever take anything just verbally from a repair shop. You make them put it in writing. Sign their name to it. Would you be so kind as, my memory's just not really good. And my husband is going to want this, you know, firsthand, so would you please just write down your name and phone number, and then just write him a note. Tell him what's the matter with my car. Here's the reason why. Because if he's not telling you the truth, he ain't going to write nothing down. That's all there is to it. He's not going to write anything down. So that's a very first clue when they said, you just have him call me. Well, just can you just write it down? That would be so much better for me, please. And if they continue to say no, it's probably because they're not telling you the truth. Because there isn't anybody I know with a good clean shop that wouldn't sit down and send a husband or a wife or an uncle or an aunt an email saying, hey, the car was in here the other day, here's the license plate number, and here's some of the concerns I saw, and I've put some numbers to those repairs. Real nonchalant, non-threatening, give you the information, tell you what I see, and you guys make up your mind. That's the way that 80% of the shops in town, in Phoenix, in the surrounding areas, that's what we do. We do a good job in that. We recognize high pressure is a bad idea. We don't want to use any scare tactics. We basically want you to have an idea of what we saw and what we think you're faced with. That's really the bottom line. So I saw this. You need to have this done, and here's a price for you. End of story. All right, mark@marksalem.com is my email address, mark@marksalem.com. I'm here every Saturday here on KKNT 960, and we start at 10 o'clock, and we go to noon, and we talk about cars. So you can get me an email, or you can see me next Saturday.